Only when I'm on a fire call.
Oh, I see. Okay. This way you do it. I'm not trying to tell you how to act.
It's not going to get you around. Nah, I was dragging you through the hot tub so I never get an idea.
Yeah.
I always walk out of the house with all my shoes tied on.
Where these are, I'm worried about the ladies.
This is true. I just never walk in shit. Is that
you? What?
I make a point not to walk in shit. I know you can't.
I can't help.
Not quite the record, but.
Watershed Council. We had several discussions about the GPS issue, which is not the public hearing tonight. with the board and the staff, and we may be able to offer some assistance with this particular issue. It's been contentious for quite a while. We have the GIS software, we have the computers, and we have the people who can operate them and transfer GPS information to GIS maps. So we perhaps could be a disinterested third party that could contract to process the data. And I mean, there would need to be a fair amount of work done to figure out exactly what everybody wants and what everybody can provide. And you know, there are several discussion items that have to happen. But it occurred to us that it may be of help to the discussion to have a third disinterested party look at processing the data. So, thank you.
Anybody else in the public? Mr. Sheldon?
Madam Mayor, will the issue of the landfill negotiated land sale issue buffer as well as the contract question be a, given have an opportunity for public comment, or should I speak now?
You should speak today. I'm going to give you time.
Yes. Thank you very much.
And tell
this is in regards to the negotiated land sale question. Mm-hmm. My name is Burl Sheldon, representing Community Waste Solutions, and the issue of a possible contract discussion. After reviewing the correspondence today and yesterday from the CWS Legal Counsel, the issues seem very clear, and I hope that the Assembly will feel the same. Our legal counsel deemed, or at least clearer than they were. Our legal counsel, Dean Thompson, has few equals in the area of Alaska law dealing with utility regulation and RCA proceedings. We feel very fortunate to have Dean and his associate, Paul Jones, working on behalf of CWS, and we appreciate their positive approach in helping the Haynesboro and CWS. The previous Haynesboro Assembly motion that pending legal counsel, a committee of the whole be convened to discuss quote, potential contract conditions and landfill security still stands, and I hope that, and the company hopes, that the Assembly will be able to talk with CWS soon, now that the legal issues are on the table for all to consider. The Assembly packet includes a GIS map and a letter from Sandwood from ADEC, in addition to our letter regarding the borough, to the borough about the land sale. Ms. Wood provides a perfect summary of the regulatory issues and why gaining title to buffer property is so important. Like ADEC, CWS also wants a best management practice and a correction of its leachate system. CWS will submit an to ADEC an approved professionally engineered plan for remediation of the collection and treatment system with or without the buffer property. If CWS cannot gain title to the buffer, the company's engineered plan will include piercing waste cells from the landfill's first decade and moving old garbage. Without a doubt, this approach will be significantly more expensive, will not constitute a best practice, and will not provide the best long-term environmental outcome. Completing a negotiated land sale for the buffer property is so very important. Lastly, today we received a professional services agreement from Mr. Tom Lovis of Energy and Resource Economics. Mr. Lovis comes very highly recommended and will provide CWS with guidance and support for our cost of services analysis and rate of return analysis. This is important information regardless of whether we enter into a new franchise agreement for town site collection, complete an RCA tariff filing, or sell the company. We know how hard you folks are all working. There's a lot to talk about, and the company hopes that we will be able to start soon.
Thank you, Michelle.
Next, Mr. Nelson.
Thank you. My name is Paul Nelson. I'd like to request that Deborah Schnabel recuse herself from voting on any issue regarding Community Waste Solutions or Haynes Sanitation because her brother, Roger, has come before this assembly and told you of his financial involvement with that company. There are problems with the Community Waste Solution landfill. The Community Waste Solutions landfill is out of Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation compliance. Community Waste Solutions is exporting waste through the same company that Acme is. ACME has the Regulatory Commission of Alaska permit and the ability to provide the solid waste collection and disposal service that Community Waste Solutions provided in the past. Now, I've given Julie a copy of the email from Brandon Miller at the RCA, and I quote, "Provided you obtain a contract or other permission from the Borough of Haines to provide refuse service within the city limits, ACME Transfer Company could successfully apply to amend its certificate to provide service in this area. If a contract was awarded, the commission could grant temporary operating authority, if requested, so ACME could provide service while the application was being evaluated." Close quotes. That's from an email dated March 10th, 2011, when we began looking into this, even before the other contract expired. ACME can get the permission. All we have to do is have the contract. See, Community Waste Solutions may want you to think that they are the only choice. The truth is, this assembly is not in a position of being told what to do. You folks know what to do. You have the power to investigate it. Furthermore, ACME has an ongoing working relationship with the Haines Friends of Recycling and will continue to do so. ACME and the Haines Friends of Recycling have already discussed collection of recyclables at ACME's 1 mile transfer station. ACME and the Haines Friends of Recycling will continue to work together. Thank you all very much.
Yes, could you tell us who you are, and come up if you don't mind.
Yeah, I know you want me up front so Damon can hear.
That's right.
My name is George Campbell, resident of Haines. I'm going to speak to the GPS. I think that the amendment that Joanne Waterman has put forward is an extremely good solution. It allows the borough to be as tenacious as it needs to be, or as relaxed as it can be, depending on the way that it's operated, and I just would like to say that I support that amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Next? Anybody? Deborah.
Thank you. I have just a clarification. GIS and GPS are the same. We're talking about the same thing.
No.
Okay. Pamela will spoke about GIS. I just wanted to clarify that. Did I hear that correctly?
GPS is Global Positioning System. That's the little instrument that reads the satellites. GIS is the information system, which is the big map that that data is put on.
Okay, so we need to. Thank you.
Is there anybody else in the audience? Yes, thank you.
Is this a good position?
If you come closer, I think
closer.
You'll be able
where
to
is
get
it.
There's
close
a tiny speaker right here. That's right Damon.
Okay, and that speaker has to pick me up.
That's right.
That's Hawaii right now.
Okay, well, okay, give me a pickup. Okay.
Go on, George.
I would like to address the...
Excuse me, who are you for the record?
Oh, I am George Figdor for the record. I'd like to speak to Ordinance 1201-279 regarding GPS. You have two concerns. One is that in the packet, there's a statement about trust, and one of the driving forces is that the assembly or the mayor is interested in winning the trust of the industry. I would argue there, you know, there needs to be two other parts to that question. One is how can we win the trust of the other stakeholders? You know, there are people who have been involved in this issue for 10 or 15 years who have a stake in it, the residents, the conservationists, the wildlife monitoring agencies, the biologists and other scientists. And also the trust is two directional. And I think one of the main reasons that we have GPS is to get the other direction of that trust, is that how can the industry win the trust of the other stakeholders and the borough by developing a good track record. And when I look at that ordinance, and certainly you have done enough to invite the trust over the last couple of years, passing emergency ordinances and extending the number of skier days in the areas pretty extensively last year. So we're missing that, the trust the other way of getting the compliance and the track record. The title of the ordinance still reads something about confidentiality, and I would argue that the ordinance now is morphed into something other than confidentiality. It really undermines the whole monitoring system. It cuts back the GPS to rather than a full-time, developing a track record, showing that monitoring works. It scales it way back to a sometimes things, leaving a lot of things vague. I would say that what we really need to do now is to make sure that this GPS system works for all stakeholders, including the people who really, what they got out of 10 or 15 years of trying to reach agreement and actually coming to a community consensus was the monitoring. And that's the essence of what we have, and I ask you, please don't scale that back. I think it would be appropriate to revisit in a couple of years and scale it back once you do have the track record.
George, but, can you wrap it up?
Okay. So I guess the question that I would like you to ask is, how well does this system work for the other stakeholders as well? I think it's part of your task is community building. That's the essence of community building, to show that the public interest involves a lot of interest groups, not just the people that have money interest in this. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Floyd, you will have a chance.
I can't speak on the GPS?
Absolutely. I just wanted to make sure. Thank you.
So I can
absolutely.
My name is Floyd McDowell, and I'm here to speak on the GPS global positioning. I agree with what Mr. Figdor just said, that when we set up the GPS, that it was to appease both sides, you know, the residents, the industry, and the borough entities, to make sure that everybody was within their bounds and it was a good thing. It was never to be put out. My understanding was it was never open for anybody just to come up and say, hey, where's this person flying or where that person is flying? And the way that this is written up, I think is very good. But I would also like to reinstate that I think it's important that we do continue monitoring the industry for a few more years before we have enough information to compile to see if we have areas that we can change and tweak a little bit. Thank you.
Thank you, Floyd. Somebody else? Any audience? No, is there anybody else in the audience who would like to speak to an item that's not on the agenda for a public hearing? Yes.
Scott Sundberg, I guess I'll speak briefly on ordinance number 12-01-279. This reads very similar to how other federal agencies regulate GPS information. Even though it's not written specifically out on the paperwork or in this ordinance, monitoring is continually ongoing because the GPSs are constantly running. If we fail to not run and get the information and the borough requests it, well, we're in violation. So I don't think the monitoring ever stops. So I think that everyone's protected in that sense. When we put together the idea of GPS, we came to the task force and the parties that were involved. It was under the understanding that, yes, we want to provide this information so that when there are viable complaints, we can either take the information and say, yes, this is where the helicopter was, and it was in its legal area, or it wasn't in its legal area. And that was the whole gist of the thing. It wasn't supposed to be a blown out public episode where everyone gets to have their say. I think that's it's over governance, really over regulating at that point. I think it'll drag everybody down, and that's, I think, a step beyond, I guess is what I'm saying. So I like how this reads. And as far as Talk Chinook Watershed Council goes, I think that's great. They have GIS and certainly have people on staff that can deal with the information, and that they are a third party. It's not that I don't trust the borough, and I don't trust the Talk Chinook Watershed Council, but if we did go to consultation on this, I would request that a bid put out to any agency that wants to deal with this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who wishes to speak? Yes.
I just got here, sorry.
Oh, can you tell us who you are?
I'm Sean Brownell, the owner of Alaska Heli Skiing, and I really don't have a problem with there being GPS going on in the helicopters and having to keep track of that data. I think it will probably help with some of the feelings that we're not landing in places that we're supposed to land. My biggest concern was making this GPS data open to just anybody who wanted to see it, like a competitor or maybe a future business that wants to come into Haines and have a heli-ski operation. So my biggest concern was just making that open to anybody who wanted to see it. I think having the borough manage it and have spot checks or have access to it's okay, but just letting the competitor get their hands on it, I think would really harm my business. And on the way in here, I was trying to think of a way to explain that in a simple form, and I tend to relate a lot of things to commercial fishing since I'm a commercial fisherman. And it would be like a longline captain who's been fishing his fishing grounds for years and years. He spent a lot of time and effort finding his fishing grounds. He sets his gear at a certain tide at a certain time of the year, and he gets his gear to lay right in there where those fish are, and that's a secret of his. And to let other fishermen have access to his information of how he runs his boat and how he catches his fish isn't really fair to make him have to give that information to all the other fishermen. And so I feel the same way about this GPS data. I've spent over a decade in Haines learning this area, close to $5 million in heli time, developing my skiing program, and to share that with the competitor just seems wrong to me. And I really feel that giving that information to the general public would harm my company.
Thank you. Is there anybody else in the audience who wishes to speak? Yes.
Thank you. I'm Deborah Bowden, and I have a considerable career of experience with tax matters. And I guess I just have kind of heard around here that if the borough gets this information, it has to be public. And I want to dispute that. I think that there's legitimate, I mean, sounds to me, I have no clue whether there's the privacy interests of the operators are, it's assumed that they are everything that they say they are. There's no reason that the borough can't receive the information, share it even with Fish and Game, and not make it publicly available. My sales tax information goes to the borough, and it doesn't become public just because it's at the borough. So I think the borough should collect the information, can keep it confidential, if that's what's appropriate, that's fine.
Thank you. Is there somebody else?
My name is Eric Morton. I, too, feel that this information should be collected on a daily basis. I don't think it should be spot checked that way. And I can understand what Sean Brunel was saying about not giving up all of your information publicly, but fishermen are being monitored. There's much more monitoring going on for commercial fishermen than there are for this particular industry. And fishermen do get ticketed for being out of bounds, and there are ways that they are being monitored that this heli-ski industry is not being monitored. And so there needs to be a little bit more regulation as far as that goes, and they need to be able to be willing to self-regulate. And so I can understand not wanting this information to be made available to competitors, but I think that it should be made available to interested parties and not just when somebody thinks there may be a violation. I think there needs to be monitoring to see if violations are occurring, not only when somebody happens to report a violation, because the regular citizen is not out in the mountains and able to monitor. So I think it's important that it be monitored daily and not spot checked.
Is there anybody else in the audience? All right. requests that came, and for each one of the requests, I was asked, or the manager was asked, to write a letter of support. And I was very uncomfortable in this position. There wasn't time for the assembly to weigh in on these requests. And I did write letters of support for every request that came to me, including a request from the Chilkat Valley Preschool for $30,000, a request from the Toshnek Watershed Council for $14,000, a request from the Haines Senior Citizen Center for $37,000, a request from the American Legion Canal Post for $150,000, and then there were little requests that the borough put in to this system that went beyond our legislative resolution that we adopted. There was also support from the borough for a school district request for $250,000, and all told, it's almost $1 million. I wrote about this on my blog, and I said that this is the last time, as long as I'm sitting here, that that is going to be the case, and that we will do our best to alert the community to the opportunity for at making these requests to the legislature, and those requests will then come through the borough assembly for approval. And I just wanted to disclose that fact, because it was awkward as far as I was concerned. I have canceled the borough's annual trip to Washington, D.C., which was budgeted for $8,500. I did this based on the recommendation of our borough lobbyist. He said if there was a year to skip that trip, this would be the year. And so we are skipping that trip. You probably will remember that the borough has signaled its interest in the sustainability of the wild fish stocks on the Chilkoot and the Chilkat, and we have received a response to our letter from the deputy fish and game person. I think I have a letter here somewhere. But I've asked Deborah Schnabel, as chair of the Commerce Committee, to help me continue this effort to make sure that our Chilkat and Chilkoot River sockeye fisheries are properly maintained. And you can expect a meeting with Jeff Regnart, Director of the Division of Commercial Fisheries, who will be coming up here and meeting with us to talk about management practices. Governor Parnell called me last Wednesday. It was a planned call, and I knew he was calling, and I picked up the phone and said, "Governor, how can we help you?" And he laughed and said, "Never as a mayor responded to him like that." And so he told me how we could help him. He wants some economic indicators to show how Haines has fared during this winter, and so we're working on some land sales and some sales tax records. And then he asked me if in the gardening conference that I am helping George Campbell launch March 16th, 17th, and 18th, if we wouldn't include information on emergency preparedness. And so I've been in touch with that office, and we are doing that. In return, the governor promised to come to Haines for the fair and to help us celebrate the 30th anniversary of the Chilkat Bald Eagle Preserve, and so I am sure that he's interested in the sustainability of our fisheries, and I will be sure to mention that when we meet with our representatives from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. All right. We now are going to move into the public hearing on the appeal of the Planning Commission decision. This is a procedures where the borough assembly is acting in a quasi-judicial role. So things are a little bit different. For instance, when it's time for the borough assembly to deliberate, you want to be thinking of them as a jury, and they, like all juries, they get to choose whether to deliberate in private or public. If they choose to deliberate in public, we will leave the room, leave you in the room, and retire to the fire hall. In private. Right, thank you. Okay. But I created a problem for myself. On Sunday, while I was listening to the planning commission, the CD that the clerk provided us of the planning commission's meeting, I realized that I really didn't have a sense of the 26-mile area. So I got in my car and I drove up to the 26-mile area to see the site, and then I took a little tour on Eagle Bluff Drive and Carina, and then I went to 33 Mile and had breakfast by myself and watched helicopter come and go. I wrote about this on my blog, so everybody knows that I did this. Well, it turns out that that was, I was gathering evidence, and I'm not allowed to do that. So I want to let you know that during this proceeding, the assembly has to make its decision by a supermajority vote. That means five members of the assembly have to be in agreement. Therefore, there is no tie breaking. There is no vote that I can cast. It's a veto-proof vote, so there's nothing I can do for a veto. So it's up. I would like to ask the appellant if they have any problem with me chairing this session. I want to ask the manager, and then I want to ask the assembly. And if anybody has a problem, I will step aside and hand the gavel to my deputy mayor, Jerry Lack. Joanne, I'd like to ask the appellant. Should I ask you first?
I must admit that I fall under the same category, Madam Mayor. I went to 26 mile on the run.
Okay.
Yeah. I would like to ask the question of who says that you're taking a drive to 26 mile and gathering evidence, and who is saying that having that knowledge about the area that we are speaking about is not allowed? Who is saying that?
I would like to let our attorney, Mr. Faulkner, Bruce Faulkner, come forward and ask help clear the air. Okay, and
Can't sit in the back of the room all
night. Might as well sit here.
Yes, the topic came up in a discussion I had with the mayor prior to tonight's meeting, where she disclosed to me that she'd gone and done this, and we had just been talking procedurally about what this meeting or this hearing was about, and of course, under code, it's an appeal of a permit denial, and it's based on the record that was previously established, the factual record. So we were talking about how it's not a hearing of which new evidence is taken, and it's not the kind of, these quasi-judicial hearings aren't things where you go out on your own and, you know, like a car crash, and you're the judge and the jury, you don't go out and see what the car crash happened, to see what the corners and turns and things look like. And so I was sort of using that as an example, and then she said, well, I have to confess that I went out and looked at the area, and then we talked briefly about, well, how to deal with that. And I thought that, well, I think, disclosure in the interests of making sure people knew it, and then conferring with the appellant and with the administration and the assembly to see if there were any problems that anybody saw with her presiding at the meeting on the basis of that. And I didn't think that there would be, but I thought it was worth recommending that she make that disclosure. Now, do I think that somebody going out and seeing where this property is in this particular circumstance is going to make them a unqualified judge in this proceeding? No, I really don't. But I'm here from the perspective of protecting the borough's interests and would not want someone later to be able to challenge the action the assembly took on the basis of that somehow one of the participants in the quasi-judicial proceeding had been conducting their own investigation into facts, because again, it is a proceeding regulated by code. So.
Okay, thank you very much. And Assemblymember Waterman disclosed that she independently did the same thing. So, at I would like to address the appellant and ask the appellant if he has objection to.
No, Madam Mayor, we have no objection to you serving or sitting in the Waterman. In our view, the site visit under these conditions, as long as there's no discussion with any of the parties, is simply a guide or an aid to them understanding the record that's in front of them.
Okay. Manager Ernst, do you have any objection?
No, Your Honor. I concur with that statement.
All right. Norm.
I think for the benefit of Mr. Hoffman, who's 4,000 miles away, that everybody come forward who wants to speak and state their name.
Okay.
And who they're representing.
All right.
Because this could be a contentious thing later on if we can't hear who's talking and what they're saying.
All right. And Damon, please help us by speaking up if you are not clear.
Well, I actually was going to ask who exactly is the appellant here?
The appellant is SEBA, and it was SEBA's attorney. Would you tell us for the record?
Yes, Daniel Bruce.
Daniel Bruce.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Norman. I come back to the assembly. Is there any objection to me presiding over this hearing, or Assembly Person Waterman? Norm?
Well, I have to say, I went up there blueberry picking last fall, too, and drove around the neighborhood. Does that count?
No, it doesn't, Norm.
Okay, well, okay. I just wanted to make it clear, so in case anybody saw me up there, I was blueberry picking.
All right.
So.
Okay. Very good. All right. The way this is going to work is that I'm putting aside my timer, and I am going to ask the appellant to come forward, because the appellant bears the burden of proof, and speak to us, and then I will ask the manager to speak, and then we will have a testimony from the public. So, we will start with Mr.
Bruce.
Mr. Bruce.
Where would you like me?
I would like you to have a place to sit down, and we're not very well.
I'm actually comfortable standing.
Okay, and there is a microphone right there. Damon, are you picking up Mr. Bruce?
Yes, I am.
Okay. All right. All right. Anytime you're ready, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, Assembly Members. My name is Daniel Bruce, and I represent SEBA in the appeal from the Haines Borough Planning Commission hearing denying their request for a conditional use permit for a heliport at mile 26. Actually, it is a non-decision by the Planning Commission, as it was a 3-3 vote. And as noted in your packet, the issue really turns on whether or not the manager's recommendation was sound or not sound. And I believe that the manager's recommendation is unsound in that it is not fact-based.
I think probably one of the most telling things about the manager's recommendation is the fact that he omits to advise the Planning Commission that SEBA has a unqualified right to have built a heliport on the property under the existing zoning as long as it didn't involve the use of commercial guides or commercial heli scheme. It is only the interface of Title 18 and Title 5 that brings us in front of the Planning Commission and ultimately the Assembly. The land use regulation is an inherent restriction, especially in this instance, on the private property owner's use of their property. And the fundamental principles of due process and the proper exercise of police power require that these use restrictions be rationally based on specific articulable facts that demonstrate that a reduction or limitation on use furthers legitimate public health, safety, and welfare interests. What facts contained in the manager's recommendation that support his conclusion that the permit should be denied? I would submit that there are really no facts in his recommendation. The only facts that are put before the commission in the hearing are the facts that were presented by SEBA. Specifically, those deal with the amount of noise generated by helicopter operations, and they give you some very good analogies to what other noises or what other activities generate equal noises. They also demonstrate the reduction of sound over distance. There's absolutely no analysis in the manager's recommendation to the Planning Commission of the number of households that are within any specific distance, the noise levels in any of those residences, or for that matter, that the amount of time that these property owners would be impacted by operations at SEBA. Those facts are introduced into the record that you have before you in the Planning Commission hearing. They have, under their best year of operation, they flew 54 days out of the 92 days that they were permitted. At this site, operating one helicopter, they would be 54 days, they would be operating roughly 2 hours a day. And so the sound levels that would be impacting the property owners over that 92-day period, if you were to take an 8-hour working day, if you take their number of 104 days, 104 hours of operation, that's 14% of the time over a 92-day period. If you want to fudge factor, give them a fudge factor of 15%, take it to roughly 120 hours of operation. That's still 16% of the time. And I would challenge anybody to make a fact-finding that given the varying levels of noise that they've established and the amount of time that they are in operation, that there is, as your ordinance defines it, a significant impact on adjoining property owners. This is a mixed-use district. It contemplates that when people buy property there, they can buy it with the understanding that they can engage in commercial activities. And in fact, there are other commercial activities in this site, which were omitted from the recommendation. You have a sawmill, you have gravel extraction. As I understand it, there's a lot of snowmobiles that go through this area. So there are tourist buses that pass by. So it is an area where mixed uses were intended to be encouraged, and my client, when it purchased the property, had a reasonable expectation that it could engage in such commercial activities. The whole concept of conditional use permits is to create a balance between the property owner's right to use their property and to minimize or mitigate the impacts that use may have on the surrounding property. It's a balancing act. And I think that the conditions that were proposed both by SEBA and the manager were reasonable conditions, very reasonable conditions, and established that balance
allowing the property owner to make beneficial use of their property in a manner intended when the area was zoned mixed use, and as such should be granted. In fact, as I said, but for Title V, SEBA would not need to come before you for a conditional use permit. And accept any questions from you.
Assembly members, do you have questions for
I'd like to ask you if you've driven up to that area.
Yes, I have.
Does that bias your opinion?
I'm not a fact finder or a judge in this proceeding. I'm an advocate.
Anybody else? Thank you.
In summation, I don't think I could say it any better than Roger Maynard did when he summarized his findings at the Planning Commission hearing, and I would certainly direct all of your attention to that portion of the record. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Now we will hear from the manager. Yes, Mr. Hahn.
Thank you. Report is fairly brief, but I just to touch on a few of the facts here. The application from SEBA was submitted on January 5th, 2012. On January 19th, the Planning Commission considered the application, and that action did result in a 3-3 tie, which was then appealed, brought to the Assembly. Normally, the Assembly would be acting on the on the decision of the Planning Commission. However, because there was a deadlock, that now falls on the manager's recommendation to the Planning Commission. I think that in reviewing the application and meeting with the company and visiting the site, I went through this very deliberatively and very carefully because I wanted to balance the interests of the property owner, in this case the developer, as well as the interests of the residents in that neighborhood. The borough does not have scientific data. We don't have methods or means of collecting decibel data and recognize that there are other factors, other operations, other equipment, machinery, and that sort of thing that does operate in that area that does produce some noise. It's clear, it's obvious to everybody who's lived out in that area or been there in the winter. But I also considered the fact that the area adjacent to the property is also developed for residential neighborhoods, and going through the eight factors which I had to review, of which the proposer, the appellant in this case now, has to meet all eight of those factors. I concluded that the application fell short on three, and that the other five either were met or I have no opinion. It can be argued, you know, that I think the items or the I sorry the criteria number one, the use is so located on the site as to avoid undue noise and other nuisances and dangers. I believe that for helicopter operation, this was not met. On criteria number four, the specific development scheme of the use is consistent and in harmony with the comprehensive plan, the current comprehensive plan, and surrounding land uses. As I noted in my report, the borough comprehensive plan did not directly address the issue of siting heliports within the borough, but did conclude that companies like SEBA
should be encouraged to develop areas away from residences. Number five, the granting of the conditional use will not be harmful to the public safety, health, or welfare. And I, again, determined that that condition was not met, in that this would introduce a disturbance to peace and quiet of valued by the nearby property owners. So, in summary, in conclusion, I did carefully consider the application and evaluated it on what I determined to be in the best interest of the borough, recognizing that the process would likely go to the Planning Commission, and also recognizing that any decision the Planning Commission then made would be probably before the Assembly. And just to summarize the factors, I was unable to find that three of the required findings, all of which must be met in order to grant a proposed conditional use permit. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
Yes. You specifically cited, I think it's language from the comprehensive plan, areas away from residences. I'm not trying to put you on the spot because it's a very subjective thing, but in your opinion, how far, what's a good measure of area away from residences? And are we...
That it falls into an area that clearly is not defined. It's subjective, admittedly, but I think that in considering the testimony, or the correspondence that we've received on this issue since I've been here over 2 years, and on this issue about a year plus, I and visiting the site, there are some mitigating topography there at the ridge. There are trees in that area, but my feeling there was, once the helicopters are up in the air, even though we have voluntary flight agreements, who knows about that in the future? And once the helicopters are in the air, it's federal airspace, and those helicopters can go in any direction. So what I came down on this was, if there was a site that would be in that vicinity, nearby, that could be developed that was further away from residential homes, that would be a preferred location.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, signed up to testify, and I would just like to caution you that we are not taking any additional information, but you can make additional arguments based on the information that is in the record. And I have 8 people signed up, but that doesn't limit you. If you haven't signed up, you're still going to be allowed to speak. I'm not going to time you, but please be mindful of the time yourself. All right, Becky Hunt.
Okay.
And would you identify yourself?
Yes.
Thank you, Becky.
Hello, I'm Becky Hunt. You're representing my own self, and I have a statement that I will read. I continue to be opposed to a heliport at 26 Mile. It's been shown that the majority of residents do not want a heliport in their neighborhood, not even for a couple months of the year. Those opposed have signed a petition, written letters to the Haines Borough, and given statements to the Planning Commission. No matter what the opposition does, this issue continues to be taken to the next level. And for the record, I am in support of the heli-ski industry, but I also believe heliports do not belong in residential areas. And it's been said that people should have a right to do whatever they want on their property. I've been a resident and property owner on Eagle Bluff Drive since 1996. When I moved to 26 Mile, I shared that ideal, and that's why I chose to build a home outside of city limits. Those who live so far out of town do so for many reasons. We have obvious freedoms that people who live in town do not have. And I'm still of that same mind in many ways. However, when I moved to Eagle Bluff Drive 16 years ago, I had only two neighbors. Our area has grown up and become a neighborhood. It's no longer appropriate to do whatever you want on your property. Along with having neighbors comes the need for respect and consideration. A heliport is simply not right for 26 Mile. And that's all. Thanks for taking time to consider my comments while you consider the future of our neighborhood.
Thank you, Becky. Tom Wade?
She did. Hello, my name is Tom Ways. I'm a guide for SEBA, and I just wanted to speak to the distances from the residences and go back to our existing legal heliports being Bud's house at 18 Mile and 33 Mile. And I think we've proved successfully in the past that we can land in proximity to homes and residences successfully. And just wanted to bring up that point, specifically speaking to that.
Thank you, John.
Hi, my name is Christopher Brooks. I own property directly bordering SEBA's property. I'm not going to say anything new. I'm going to say the same thing I said at the Planning Commission meeting, and that is I believe SEBA has shown through fact that this will work a lot better than the current situation they have with the airport landings and the 33 mile landings. It just makes a lot more sense to have it there. It's unfortunate that a lot of people feel that because they have theirs that nobody else should have anything, no opportunities. This is an industry that comes here for a few months and then goes away. I can't think of a better way to do business than to have something that you just don't have the impact that you have year-round. It makes a lot more sense, I believe. I was up at 33 Mile 3 weeks ago, eating lunch, watched the helicopter come into land, didn't upset my lunch, it wasn't that bad. I would just ask to look at the facts and see things that it just makes more sense. Thank you.
Thank you, Christopher.
My name is Flynn McDowell, and I have a letter in your packet that I submitted to the Planning and Zoning Commission, which states most of my concerns. There was a statement brought up at the Planning and Zoning Commission regarding the helipad at 26 Mile. And I was told directly to my face that if that permit is granted, there's going another permit at 26 Mile and one at 35 Mile. It seems to me that the heli-ski industry is going. I support it, but I'm opposed with the helipad being in a residential area. And it seems the only thing that the heli companies have in common is that they neither one want to pay to land nor take off. And so the trend is buy land and get a conditional use permit and put a helipad here and a helipad there and a helipad there, and the ones that are already there nobody's going to use because they're charging to land, and that is the only reason why everybody wants their own helipad. I agree with the Planning Commission and past borough members saying that the heli-ski industry does need a place to land, one that is not on private land, one that is on borough land that meets their requirements and electricity and all of that fuel storage containment, spills, all of that prevention is in place. But it should not be on private property, because then you're always going to have this battle. And I asked the borough and to have the them consider putting it in a confirmed residential area. I've had my house has been built since 1986. You know, I've lived there since 89, and all of the university property behind me was opened up for residential lots. Why, after people have bought those lots, built their homes, would the borough even consider letting them land helicopters in that close of proximity? Just amazes me. It is an issue, though. I do believe that the community as a whole could come up and find a place that is not private property that can be enhanced to fill this void. But I ask the borough members to please respect the decision that was made by the Planning and Zoning Commission, which was a tie vote. I will grant that, but they did not pass. They did not meet the 8 points, and that the borough manager, Robert Venables, and the many residents in the immediate area who are against this, I just ask you guys to please respect the decisions and deny Steve their conditional use permit. Thank you.
Nicholas?
Want to come up there?
Please.
So my name is Nicholas Jadkowski, and I live in that 26-mile area. I've sent a letter to all the assembly members on by email, but apparently it was after the prohibition on receiving emails or whatever, so I'm not sure that my comments are part of the public record. It's just argumentation on existing things in the record. So I will try to read the letter and try to edit out anything that's not any longer relevant. I think it's been made clear already that what is necessary for granting that conditional use permit is that every single one of those 8 requirements are met. And I want to point out that this is not a debate about supporting businesses. It's not a debate about supporting heli-skiing. Whether you support heli-skiing or you don't, those 8 requirements still have to be met. And I think any borough representative that tries to take a vote on the issue without substantiation of those 8 requirements being met is putting themselves in a legally dangerous position. Really advise everybody in the borough not to put themselves in that position. I think that there's perhaps a slight procedural misunderstanding by...
Would you speak to that?
Oh, yeah. I was making a reference to something that Dan and Bruce had said earlier. This isn't an issue of land use restrictions. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about a Title 18 issue. It's a Title 5 issue. That's why conditional use permit is necessary here. And the burden of proof in this case is on the applicant to show that these requirements are met. If it's not possible to make a finding of fact, then the application fails. That's the way the process works. So what keeps getting referred to as a tie vote, really, it's just an absence of the necessary 4 votes to pass the motion. It doesn't really matter what the other 3 votes were. We may have 3-0 or 3 abstentions, it wouldn't matter. It's just do you have the necessary votes to pass the motion or you don't. Same goes to finding the fact or anything else. And I also want to point out that if Daniel Bruce thinks that Roger Maynard summed up his position, that's pretty, that's kind of dangerous, because Roger Maynard said at that Planning Commission meeting that basically, he believed that the rights of private businesses took precedence over meeting those 8 requirements. and it's lucky that his opinion did not become the predominant opinion that guided that vote. Otherwise, the Planning Commission would have been in legal error. So it's good that that did not happen. So I just want to quickly go through the requirements that I think were not met by CBIS conditional use permit application. Obviously, the noise issue. If a heliport satisfies this requirement in this location, it's frankly, it's ridiculous. You might as well not have the requirement in there. Doesn't, how could it possibly, where would you ever restrict it? If you could allow it in an area in a cluster of residential properties, Gabriela Corona's house, I mean, she could throw a piece of gum out her window into the helipad. If that satisfies the requirement, it's preposterous. It's hardly necessary to say anything more about it. I know that SEVA or Scott Sundberg submitted a bunch of information into the record regarding decibel levels, and I think it's handy that he did that, actually, because he included some information about how other municipalities have handled actual decibel levels that were quantified with specific measurements, for instance, Anchorage and also Grand Junction, Colorado. In those areas, in the areas that were zoned for industrial use, the maximum allowable decibel level at the outside edge of your property is 80 decibels in areas zoned industrial, not residential areas. That A-Star helicopter on power takeoff and landing goes up to 94 decibels. And 14 decibels is a huge difference. It's a vast difference because it doubles every number. So 10 decibels up, it's 10 times as loud. So it's vastly louder. So it's frankly, that requirement, it would be flabbergasting if someone tried to suggest that that were met. Requirement two is about adjoining properties and the property values. I know that I submitted information to the record from several different studies that concluded that residential properties near airports and aircraft landing areas are definitely quantifiably decreased in property value. And I've seen nothing countering that anywhere in the record or in anybody's testimony. I mean, a few people just said personally they like it or whatever, but that doesn't give any quantifiable information. I'll read this specifically from this letter. This is a quote from an FAA study. It's not by some fringe element. It's the FAA, commissioned by the Department of Commerce of the United States, called Aviation Noise Effects. Studies have shown that aircraft noise does decrease the value of residential property located around airports, although there are many socio-economical factors which must be considered because they may negatively affect property values themselves. All research conducted in this area found negative effects from aviation noise, with effects ranging from a 0.6 to 2.3% decrease in property value per decibel increase of cumulative noise exposure. This section reports on those studies, of course, the study went on. I think that's a great, if anyone wants to learn more about aviation noise and its effects, it's a great resource. You can Google search it and look it up. You can learn all kinds of things about noise, decibel measurements, and the effects on humans, on all of the things. Next one, I'm trying to be quick here. There's a lot of stuff that's important. The specific development scheme, this is requirement number four, specific development scheme of the use is consistent and in harmony with the comprehensive plan and surrounding land uses. At the time of the, I know that it's been getting worked on, the comprehensive plan, but as of that Planning Commission meeting in January, the existing comprehensive plan acknowledged that area of the borough has become predominantly residential and will likely be best served by rezoning to that effect. This is a quote from the comprehensive plan that was also included in the record already. Borough residents generally want residential land use and neighborhoods protected from commercial and industrial activity that can bring in noise, traffic, and lighting that is not compatible with a residential lifestyle.
Excuse me, Nicholas, clarification. Yep. Is that from the approved comprehensive plan or the draft comprehensive?
This is from what existed as of January 19th, the existing one. It's not.
Thank you.
Sure. So just continuing that. Growing neighborhoods along the Haines Highway may wish to pursue zoning designations
that will maintain the rural residential character of their neighborhoods. The borough intends to protect and strengthen the integrity of its residential areas, but also provide flexibility for home business and limited neighborhood commercial use, especially in outlying residential areas. Perhaps someone would try to contend that this is a heliport would be a limited neighborhood commercial use, but I think that would be a dubious contention. Of 81 properties in the surrounding area that were involved in a rezoning effort, one-third of them, roughly, are used as full-time residences. Approximately the same number, another third, are used intermittently as vacation-type properties or whatever, and a third of them are, you know, not particularly occupied or used in some other way. A case was made by the heliport proponents that some of the surrounding land uses were industrial in nature and comparable to a heliport in noise impact. This is just simply false. The wood sawmill is just basic, says 110 decibels. I don't know who's ever gone and measured it in decibel levels, but you can't hear it from my place. I know that. It's also been out of operation for the last 2 years. So it's hardly, it's basically the same type of sawmill as Buster's that operated on the edge of town here. So you want to have a sense of what that impact is like, that would be comfortable. I know that when SEVA landed their helicopter at their property in 2008, it shook my home. It was really, really, really loud when I was inside my house at that time. So there's no comparison at all. They mentioned that Chip Strong lives in the area. He's a heavy, you know, equipment operator, but that's his home. The fact that he just is an equipment operator doesn't make his home an industrial use. They say that the farm has got a gravel extraction pit. I'd like someone from the farm to come and indicate where that gravel extraction pit is, and if they don't do so, I think that should be struck from the record. And as far as some people talking about snowmobiles using Chilkat Lake Road, that definitely happens, and sometimes people do open it up and it can be pretty loud. But if that's our precedent for if someone's doing something that's actually technically illegal, I'm not making an issue out of it, but it's actually illegal to drive your snow machine down the road, and especially if you're speeding and driving really fast and dangerously, that's hardly going to be a legal precedent for making a heliport in the area. And so the requirement number four, I guess, harmony, is one of the least applicable words that we use to describe a heliport in this residential area. So requirement four is also not met. And then requirement eight states that comments received from property owners impacted by the proposed development have been considered and given their due weight. The manager kind of abstained from discussing this particular requirement because he said he didn't have the necessary information. He didn't have the comments from the public. And a lot of that testimony happened at the meeting itself. So I'd like to point out that in 2011, 44 of the property owners in that area signed a petition opposing heliport in the neighborhood, supporting a rezoning to effect that purpose. This petition was submitted to the borough along with an application to rezone the area as rural residential. Some of these individuals have also written letters to the borough to further elaborate on their feelings on the issue. All of these statements were resubmitted to be included in the January 19th Planning and Zoning Commission meeting packet. Aside from the SEVA owners, only six property owners, as I counted, only one of whom actually lives on the property, had signed or written any statements in support of the heliport at that time, at the time of that commission meeting. One owner resident had told us verbally they support the heliport, although they didn't make a statement about it. Another owner resident wrote a letter emphatically opposing the heliport at that time, but they also don't support the rezoning, so they're not part of that 44 signing that petition. So then there's another 20 owners who didn't give a particular opinion on that issue. So basically, we get in the written record 44 written signed statements opposing the heliport in the neighborhood, and six signed statements supporting it. So. And then also, I mentioned at that January meeting, there were seven people, as far as the public record also, seven people spoke against the conditional use permit. Six of them were owner or resident in the 26 mile area. Four people spoke in favor of the conditional use permit, and only one of them only owned land in the area and was still not a resident. So this requirement eight is comments received from property owners impacted by the proposed development. Well, it's nice to hear what everyone in the borough thinks. That's not actually what that requirement's about. So as far as that requirement, clearly an overwhelming majority of comments received from property owners impacted by the proposed development are in opposition to that heliport and the condition of this permit, and thus requirement eight is clearly not met. So I would say, ultimately, the Pier Siva is holding to its usual course of attempting to go against the wishes of affected local residents. And with their current annual threat of suing the borough, they looks like they want to refuse the management and authority of the local government again. So I just say we put up with a lot of inconveniences in order to live at 26 mile in that area in the upper part of the valley. And the prospect of having the conditions there disrupted on that level by dozens of A-star helicopters taking off close proximity, it gives me, my family, a lot of anxiety, and all my neighbors as well, and especially with our four-month-old son. So having to repeatedly come to meetings and testify on this issue also causes additional stress for us. And so I believe it's quite clear the commission made a fair legal decision on behalf of the borough, and it should be upheld. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicholas. Jessica? Jessica, why don't you go up here? Hi, I'm Jessica Blocka. And for the sake of my son, who's really not enjoying the meeting, I will say ditto to what my husband said, which I think covers a lot of bases and is really well researched document. And I just want to ask all of you decision makers to consider all those people that you mentioned who live in the area and property in the area, have spouses and children, adding up to between 100 and 150 people who will be affected by the decision that you all make tonight. Severely affected, seriously affected. And this will be like minimum. And so please consider that tonight. And I also want to read into the record a letter that was put in time but didn't end up in the packet for some reason. This is from Inland Marine Fairbank, Alaska. I'm writing to express my opinion regarding SEBA's appeal to the Borough Assembly for a conditional use permit for their heliport. My husband and I have been looking at relocating to Haines, and we have specifically found the 26-mile area as the location best suited to fit our needs. We've considered a few interesting pieces of property over the period of a year now, but in the end, we are unwilling to purchase any specific property because of the threat of a heliport in the neighborhood. A heliport is too large of a disturbance to accept into one's personal life and neighborhood existence, and we know we would be unhappy with this magnitude of that disturbance, both audible and visual. I ask that you deny this appeal and commission stronger zoning in the immediate area to ameliorate the dichotomy between residential land uses and a commercial enterprise with a disturbance of this magnitude. And I just want to say, in closing, SEBA can't meet the conditions that are necessary to get them this permit. They just can't. They can't make their helicopters quieter. If there was a helicopter landing within a half mile of here, half a mile away from here, you wouldn't be able to hear what I'm saying clearly. It's that loud. And all of us in our houses felt and heard them landing 2 years ago when they did their initial landing, shaking our houses, disrupting our lives incredibly. If you have never felt it, I'm sure it would be difficult to make your decision. I appreciate that both of you went up there to check out the area. It's unfortunate that that affected your ability to make a decision. So I think it's really important to understand the area, understand the people, understand the magnitude of the disturbance that question. So
please use your imagination and imagine all the people here tonight testifying as they already have it happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Jessica. You may ask a question.
Jessica? I just want to establish when both she and Nick said that their house shook, and I want to know relative. I have a map here. Where is your? This, I believe, is the Steva process.
Now, this is, I want to mention that this is not new information. During the Planning Commission meeting, everybody went to the map and pointed out their house.
So Steva's actually right here is where there is a corner. There's your
I
don't
know where you're going.
This is our site and this is our here.
Can I make a quick addendum?
Yes.
There's a factual incorrectness that Steva attests that there's only one property owner that's adjacent to them that objects to the health record. There's actually three that are immediately adjacent to their property, two of whom bought property from Steva, considering that it was going to be a residential area, not knowing that there was going to be a health work right there.
We have that information.
We do have that information, So, I just
want
to make that clear.
Thank you. Thank you. George Campbell. And I really have to say thank you, everybody, for listening so well and carefully. Thank you very much, George.
Thank you, Madam Mayor and Assembly. I'll try and stick to just basic facts. And it's unfortunate that during the planning and zoning meeting, which I attended, there was an awful lot of statements made, and I believe some of the manager's statements. They are subjective, and I'd like to correct some of those. First of all, we've heard about the house shaking. I personally owned a hangar, and I worked in a hangar with machine tools, which if you've ever done finishing on machine tools, finish is the key, and you need everything perfectly smooth. My hangar was less than 150 feet from coastal helicopters doing base operations in Juneau. We had helicopters going in and out of there all day long. We could hold a conversation inside my hangar, 150 feet away from their base. So I hear that houses shake and stuff like that. I wonder why the houses are shaking, because if I've got helicopters working 150 feet away from me, my building, my machine tools should have been shaking, and I wouldn't be able to get anything done. So I asked why they're having this issue, and I don't know, but that's, you know, my experience. We've heard a lot about zoning. This particular area, people keep forgetting that this is not zoned as residential. I believe there's a small portion, or this university subdivision was sold as residential area, but the rest of the property Steva's talking about, and the sawmill and all that, like it's been said before, this is multiple use properties. It is not residential. It is not uncommon to have residential properties next to heavy commercial and industrial properties. I mean, it happens all over the world, so I don't understand why people think because they're in one area, this has to be zoned the same as theirs. Mr. Sundberg brought up a study by DOT that clearly stated decibel ratings, and during the meeting, it seemed like a couple individuals really ignored the fact that they had comparison studies of helicopter noise versus other noise. And those, sit around the street, is a Harley Davidson noise any different than a snowmobile noise, different than a helicopter noise? I don't think so. So if you've got a decibel rating is the same. And as things move away, those decibels go down. It's, just the fact of physics. So I think that DOT study was ignored, and I'm hoping that you guys did some serious reading on that. One of the commission members made the statement that the airport was the safest place in the valley for the helicopters to be flying. He stated that 33-mile and 18-mile heliports were not safe places of operation. That was made by an individual that, to my knowledge, has no operational experience with any kind of aircraft whatsoever. I will state for the record, as a person that works in aviation industry, that the heliport at the airport is not the safest place. In fact, the day after the commission meeting, we had 45 knot gusts. at the Haines Airport, I had less than 5 knot gusts at 18 mile. And I don't believe that that the safety factor at the airport is any higher than my place at 18 mile. Also, the fixed wing traffic, all the helicopter traffic has to cross the traffic pattern in two different areas. The general heliports, if you look at the way that they have had many, many meetings trying to keep fixed wing and rotorcraft in separate areas, and they've actually based certain, they've based the three helicopter companies in areas where they can fly the main ramps without getting over top of the airport. And sometimes if there's no helicopter traffic, the aircraft can actually turn towards the valley to go directly to Montana Creek. If the helicopters are flying much, we don't get to go that way. We have to go the long way around to separate traffic. We don't have traffic separation other than pilots talking here at the Haines Airport. So that increases the risk of a mid-air collision at the Haines Airport. So that statement by a member of the Planning Commission was not correct. Also, one of the other issues about safety, and it's not brought up about 26 mile, there's an awful lot of heli-skiing that goes on up in that area. The shorter the flights, the less time that these birds are in the air, the safer it is. All machinery is going to break at some point. We all just hope that we find the warm parts and replace them. The helicopter industry has figured out that instead of timing or doing stuff on time, they do it on condition, they do it on time. After so many hours, the rotor blades come off. After so many hours, the engine gets changed. The safety is very high. However, we still have situations where helicopters have mechanical malfunctions. The less time those birds are in the air, the safer you are. So by shortening up the helicopter runs, putting the helipad, satellite helipads out farther and farther, which gets closer to the skiing area, the better it is for the helicopter companies and the safety. There was a statement made by one of the people on the Planning Commission about this not being neighborly as a reason to vote against the conditional use permit. But yet, I don't believe that the Planning Commission should be judging anything on the term neighborly. It should be on the issues of code and the 8 points. And I don't feel that those 8 points were seriously looked at by that person. The 26 mile area at the time of consolidation and since then, the 26 mile area has had the opportunity of planning and zoning, and it was denied. They didn't want to do that, and this is one of the things that we keep bringing up, the zoning within residential. They had the opportunity to zone that whole area as residential, and they haven't done that. The aircraft noise study, and I'm not familiar with the one that was quoted, and the statements are the ones that were made by the commission members. However, I made the statement that no helipads weren't necessarily an evaluation of property. If you get on the internet, and you may not be able to look at new stuff, but that's a fact that is actually not true. Aircraft, when the FAA talks about aircraft noise, they are lumping fixed wing and rotorcraft. The studies, if you get looking into rotorcraft studies, you will find that where helicopter pads specifically, not fixed wing, helicopter pads, they actually have found there's an increase in property values. And that study, I've got that from people, but that study comes from partially, helipads are generally speaking based around hospitals and other things like that, and people want to be close to those. So it sounds counterintuitive, but there are studies out there that say if it's only a helipad, the property values go up. It's a fixed wing that drives the prices down. And again, I want to close with the DO study showed that, you know, through decibels, the noise really isn't an issue. And unfortunately, it seems we have a lot more emotions operating on this decision than we've had true facts. And if all the things that people considered facts are reviewed and looked at, I believe you'll find things that a lot of people are saying, well, this is a fact. It really is not. And it talks about this use being, kind of working with the neighboring use. I would submit that when you've got gravel extraction, heavy equipment companies, heavy industrial shops and sawmills, I would say that a heliport isn't really that far off, and I would say it is consistent with that use. So I would like to see this permit approved. Thank you very much.
Thank you, George. That concludes the people who have signed up, but anybody else who would like to speak is welcome to do so.
I'm Rob Goldberg. I'm the chair of the Planning Commission, and I was the presiding officer at the previous hearing. And I wasn't planning to speak tonight because you have the tape from the meeting, and I thought that would provide all the information you needed. But what prompted me to get up is that Mr. Bruce said something earlier that I don't agree with. He called into question the manager's recommendation and said that the only evidence presented at the Planning Commission meeting was by SEBA and the numbers they gave about the decibel ratings. And I would just like to ask, doesn't the testimony of the residents in the area count as evidence? Because that's what I base my decision on. I can't speak for what was going through the minds of any of the other planning commissioners, but I can speak for myself. And Mr. Campbell implied that I did not look at the 8 criteria and base my decision on the testimony, and that is absolutely incorrect. If you listen to the tape, you will hear that I went over each of the 8 points and found that I agreed with the manager's recommendation that 3 of those conditions were not met, and I actually agreed with, I came to the conclusion after hearing the testimony from the residents that I think the property values will go down. And so in my mind, SEBA's application did not meet 4 out of the 8 criteria that are necessary. Regarding the evidence of the numbers that SEBA brought forward about the decibels, there seemed to be an attempt with the presentation of the numbers to convince us that helicopters really aren't very loud. And yet, if you read, you can do a lot with numbers, and I like numbers. I work with numbers a lot. And if you read the data that SEBA presented, you will see in there that the decibel scale works much like the Richter scale, in that every number increase is actually a doubling. So if you go from 50 to 60 decibels, it's actually a tenfold increase in sound pressure. Using those numbers, if the ambient decibel level in a quiet neighborhood there is 50 decibels, and you introduce something that produces sound at 80 decibels, you're actually getting a 10 times 10 times 10, that's a thousandfold increase in sound pressure. That's why helicopters sound so noisy, especially in a quiet neighborhood. We heard evidence from residents in the area that the previous helicopter landing there caused a major impact to their lives. And it was obvious to me that if we allow a heliport to be there, it's going to cause a major disruption in the lives of the residents there. And in my mind, that's why it didn't meet the criteria that are laid out in the code. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. Eric, please.
My name is Eric Murphy, and I also am a resident at 26 Mile. I am directly across the street from the proposed heliport, less than 1,000 feet away. And there is a clear cut between our two properties, so there is not a sound barrier. And I would like people here to know that before any of this talk about putting a heliport in our neighborhood, there were no issues in our neighborhood. And it has become very divisive, and there's a lot of hostility in our neighborhood, and I'm sure that you can pick that up from all of the information in the packet. That never existed before. And there is personal attacks going on, and it's just become really stressful for us in the neighborhood.
I don't think so. Erica has testified to this before.
Yes. I also would like to make it known that this is one business that's going to benefit from this, and a neighborhood that would suffer. And as Jennifer, as Jessica said, there's between 100 and 150 people that are going to be affected by this. A lot of the people that are in support of it don't even live in the area. Again, exactly what Floyd McDowell said, if you're going to do something for the heli-ski industry, do something for the heli-ski industry, not for one business on private property. Create something that can be used for all, because the next thing that's going to happen is happening, is other businesses are applying for permits to land on private property, and that is happening. I did want to bring a picture from Google Earth to show you all our neighborhood, but it was about 8 years dated, and since then there have been a lot more houses that have been built, and I don't think that everybody here is familiar with the neighborhood, but it is a neighborhood. And Scott Sundberg talked about decibels in his proposal, and in residential neighborhoods the average decibel level is 55. He says at 1,000 feet, which would be considered my property, the decibel level would be 68 to 70 decibels. And there are three other properties that are less than 500 feet from him, and the decibel levels are increased. And then from a lot of the reading that I've done, it's subjective, noise is subjective. Some things bother some people more than it bothers other people. And but what different studies have shown is that the helicopter noise is more annoying than other noise at the same decibel level, and that has to do with the rotor blades and the type of noise that it is. And that's been shown in study after study. The FAA in Code 150 has recommendations, and in the recommendations they suggest that before a heliport or an airport is put in, that a lot of work is done in the planning phase, and that this planning should be done in local government. And so I want us to be planning for a heliport, and to talk about what George Campbell said, why do these houses shake when he's in a hangar that doesn't shake? Well, the reason for that is because there are codes, and people that build near airports, there are specific codes for that, so that they are in homes that don't shake, and that's probably the case for a hangar at an airport, and that's not the case for our neighborhood. We do not have codes that are specific to heliports. So our houses are going to shake. Everybody's house is probably going to shake because we're not built for that. The number one reason in different information that I've read about noise, pollution, the number one reason in this one report for dissatisfaction in neighborhoods was noise, and people rated noise to be more dissatisfying than actually crime, and that was the reason that people would choose to move from neighborhoods, because of the negative impact. And it affects people physically, emotionally, the noise. There's lots of studies about the physical effects. And the other thing I wanted to say, too, is that Roger Maynard made a statement that he was at 18 mile. We're talking about, are helicopters a nuisance? He made a statement that you probably heard if you listened to the audio, that he was at 18 mile and that the helicopter landed. And it interrupted his conversation, but only for 1 or 2 seconds. And he was inside. And I think that that would be a nuisance. If I'm in my home and I have to stop talking every time a helicopter comes and goes for 1 or 2 seconds. I don't think that there's a reason that I should have to put up with that.
And the other thing, too, is that we're not here to discuss the safety of this business and whether we should try to diminish their flight times and help them to use less fuel and try to be more environmental. This is a discussion about whether or not a heliport should be in a residential neighborhood. How they manage their finances and how they choose to do that in their safety is up to them, and it's not for us to decide how they go about doing that and to try to help implement any of those changes for their business. And I would like to ask a question to Scott Sundberg, if I could.
No.
Okay. I do know that if SEBA is ready to start landing helicopters at their heliport this season, if that's in the proposal, that they do not have a favorable airspace determination under FAR 157, and that they are required to submit notification 90 days prior to any construction that is to take place on their property for a heliport. And Matt Freeman at the FAA says he does not have this.
I think that this is
and there is no, this site has not been evaluated. For heliport.
I haven't read the whole record to know if this is true or not.
This is not information in the record. So, thank you, Erica. So, as a judge would say, I want you to disregard.
I'm writing it down.
Thank you very much. Yes, need to settle down. Thank you. You've all been so good, Erica. You've had a turn.
I just wanted to make a comment because they did mention that they had spent money in construction of their heliport.
Okay, that's
and I want that to be clear that.
Okay, thank you.
Don Turner, I'm also in the Planning Commission. I think part of the thing, at least in its end, part of the record that my argument about this heliport was that we have in code where if you buy a piece of property, you have 2 years to develop it under the code and under the regulations that are there when you do it. I think the manager's decision to bring it to the Planning Commission was an error, and I stated that in the record, that the actual Title V submission was put in during. This is a general use zone to start out with. It's not a residential zone. It's been a general use, and I've been on the Planning Commission for a while, and have gotten pretty hostile reactions to zoning out the highway, and so this is a general use zone. It's not a residential zone. Number two, that the manager's decision to bring it to the Planning Commission, I feel, was an error just because they have 2 years to do that. The code that is in the Title V that says by Planning Commission or by conditional use by the Planning Commission was inserted when we put in the general use zone a little bit over a year ago. We inserted that into the general use zone that you have to a heliport is a conditional use permit. And that language was inserted in the Title V. So that language was not in Title V when they purchased the property. And I feel that the whole reason for the 2 year thing is exactly what's happened. You buy a piece of property for an intent under the code that you have, and then the property owners around you get together and go to the assembly and change the code that you have the right to do what you were going to do with the property when you bought it. And so this is exactly what's happening, as far as I can see. I mean, you have someone that purchased a piece of property, the neighbors around it got the code changed, but that, like I said, the Title V was inserted after that fact. And so that was in the record, my argument, and so that's all I want to say.
Thank you. I would like to say that I particularly appreciate the two planning commissioners who have come, even though they presented opposite points of view. I appreciate that. Somebody else in the audience who would like to speak?
I'm Mario Benassi, and I, for the record, I always speak for the wildlife. And here, this is indefensible. Helicopters affect wildlife in irrevocable ways, and any eagles that would be attempting to nest in that area would be put off. And it happens at a critical time of the year, when they're operating. This is when birds are setting up to nest and so forth. And so there's that impact. And also the proximity to the Bald Eagle Preserve. We have a preserve. Does it really preserve bald eagles? And are we making a decision, that is going to impact the preserve just in its proximity? I don't know that it's on the preserve directly, but it is in close proximity. And these lines that we draw and call preserve and not preserve are just fictitious, imaginary lines when it comes to wildlife and the preservation of wildlife. Often, when these lines are drawn, they don't take into consideration the actual needs of the animals per se. So just to be mindful of that. I just want to reiterate, you have in your packets information about helicopters and their impacts to wildlife. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
In the
back. Can you work your way forward?
Thank you. Hi, Bill Kurtz. I had absolutely no intention of speaking tonight. Sometimes you can't resist. The majority of people spoke about that way, pointed out about their freedom. As you folks that you well know, I'm a freedom nut. So just remember, when you're trying to take away the other guy's freedom, you're taking away your own. It's kind of like a fence. When you fence the other guy out, you fence yourself in. As far as helicopter use, it's nothing new out there. We used to have the popcorn wagon on the corner of the Ski Lake Road and the Haines Highway. Jim McLaughlin was developing a mine up on the top of Flower Mountain. And the chopper was in and out quite often, and he later went up work for BP, and they did their core work and were back and forth. So helicopters in the area is a good thing. They're good also where this proposed helicopter site is reasonably close to the Killeen Fire Department. So for emergencies in the Upper Valley, it would be at least fairly close. So I believe that would Donnie just got done saying about when this property was purchased and what the rules were then should apply. Changing the rules afterwards isn't quite fair. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there another person in the audience?
No.
What is going to happen next?
Do we have an opportunity for a vote?
I'll be brief because I know it's been a long night and I have spent many nights.
It's going to be an even longer night. So,
being brief, we heard a line that I thought was particularly illustrative about the situation earlier tonight, and that is somebody asked you to use your imagination. That's not what you're charged to do tonight. You're not supposed to use your imagination. You're supposed to listen to the facts, weigh the facts, and render a decision. And you're supposed to, when you apply those facts, you look at those eight factors. And I submit that we've met by preponderance of the evidence that my client meets all of the conditions required for a conditional use permit. Flight time is reduced by 65%. That's a fact if they operate from this site. We've heard evidence that increases safety. It reduces flight congestion at an airport. What are the numbers of properties that are directly impacted by these operations? And by directly impacted, I wish more of you had been to the site, because you would see that there's maybe a handful of properties within 1,000 to 2,000 feet of the site. And you've got the facts that show how decibel levels drop as the helicopters get higher and move farther away from the property line. They're within that 80 or less than 80 decibel level for an industrial area. They're dropping down to 70. You've got those facts. We're talking about 2 hours a day, maybe 54 days a year. That's a minimal impact. The wildlife issues that were just raised, I'm sorry, but the logic escapes me how reducing flight time by 65% increases the impact on wildlife. You've got flight paths that have been shown in the record showing that operations from mile 26 will not be flying over houses. They fly away from houses. The evidence at the Planning Commission was flight operations at 18 mile and 33 mile involve flight paths over houses. You know, as I said in the initial presentation, it's conditional use permits that are balanced. Do helicopters make noise? Certainly. The question is, how significant is that impact on the adjoining property owners? And I think the overwhelming evidence is that the number of people that will be significantly impacted is de minimis. Thank you. And one final comment. It is a general use district. Everybody that purchased property there purchased it with the understanding that commercial uses were allowable.
Thank you. Mr. Ernst, would you care to make some...
Just a correction, if I could.
Right.
I just wanted to state that Commissioner Turner stated that I brought the conditional use permit to the Planning Commission. And in fact, it was SEVA that brought the conditional use permit to the borough, and that from there it goes to the Planning Commission. But I just wanted it to be clear that was the process. So just so that there's no confusion, that I brought something to the Planning Commission outside of what's prescribed in the code.
Thank you.
That's all.
This is what's going to happen next. The Borough Assembly is required to render its decision this evening. It can deliberate its decision in public or in private. Doing so in private is not considered an executive session because this type of decision-making body is a quasi-judicial body and it is not guided by the Open Meetings Act. I had previously said that the Borough Assembly would retire to the fire hall, but I don't believe that we can take Damon with us. And so if the Borough Assembly wishes to meet in private, I'm going to have to ask the public to
go to the fire hall.
To get out of this room. But that is up to the Assembly. So is there... would somebody like to make a motion expressing where you would like to deliberate, either in public or in private? Mr. Smith?
I'd like to make a motion that we take a short recess so I can think about it after I recess myself.
Is there a second to take a short recess? Okay, 5 minutes. Is any objection? Okay, 5 minute recess. Thank you.
I realize you're like,
About the motion.
I'm
have no preference either way.
Okay.
I would go with what most people feel comfortable with.
Yes.
When you say we will deliberate but not come to a decision, the decision still needs to be made in public.
That's
that
exactly right. Okay. All right. Mr. Hoffman, do you have any comments to make or are you ready to vote?
I'm ready to vote.
All right. All those in favor of deliberating in private, would you please signal by raising your right hand? Mr. Hoffman, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Vick, are you voting?
That's what they want.
Okay. All right. The motion carried unanimously. I'm going to have to ask the public through the room, and you can retire to the fire hall upstairs. Thank you.
I was going to say my phone has a good speaker phone.
No, no, we're fine. Thank you.
Is this yours?
No.
Yeah. Okay, this is on.
Yeah. That's on.
Yeah.
What was that?